Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, March 28, 2018. The government of South Sudan shuts down Vivacell company over unpaid fees.
We want them to pay a sum of $66 million for their license. And up to now, they are dragging their feet, they are not paying, and they are continuing to operate.
And what are the legal implications of the Vivacell shutdown?
We have the right to sue the company. Vivacell is also liable to sue the government for the losses that have been incurred since international traffic were suspended. Vivacell is in position to sue the government if our system, our legal system, is not broken in the country.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan government last night shut down phone network operator Vivacell, affecting tens of thousands of mobile phone users. Information Minister Michael Makuei says the company failed to pay licenses fee totaling to more than $60 million. Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
We want them to pay a sum of $66 million for their license. And up to now, they are dragging their feet, they are not paying, and they are continuing to operate.
Government spokesman Michael Makuei says that's why the government shut down Vivacell, which forced tens of thousands of network subscribers to rush out and buy SIM cards from other mobile phone carriers. Business owners say they have lost thousands, if not millions, of South Sudanese pounds in unsold airtime. Makuei, who is also a Vivacell subscriber, acknowledges that the government exempted Vivacell from paying taxes for the past 10 years and the company did not have to pay for an operating license. But he says the government now wants Vivacell to operate under the policies of the government and pay for an operating license. Vivacell has been operating in South Sudan since 2008. The government says that $66 million is for the operational fees only. It does not include annual fees. The network was shut down at midnight, although many subscribers only learned of the decision this morning. Throughout the day, long queues formed in the offices of other mobile phone network operators can be seen across Juba as hundreds of people rush to buy new subscriber identification module or SIM cards. Eva Vanustos is one of them. Speaking in Arabic, Vanustos says the sudden shutdown of Vivacell cut her off from friends and relatives, including those living overseas.
I used to call my elder brother who in America, and now we have been disconnected with him. And now I have also lost all contact. It will be unless I find my friends or my sister or any other relatives, then I will take their contacts so that we can contact each other.
Vanusto says since she can no longer use her Vivacell phone, it will be a major headache retrieving all of her contacts and their information and loading it on a new SIM card. Aside from hampering communication among friends and family members, the decision to shut down Vivacell has affected many business operations too. Businessmen and women who have been selling Vivacell airtime say they have lost thousands, if not millions, of South Sudanese pounds to the shutdown. Lualdeng Arok, a supervisor at Edoma, which distributes Vivacell airtime and SIM cards in Juba, says the shutdown has hurt his company.
We have our money there, something like $1,700,000. We don't know what to do. It is the Vivacell who may explain more to us as a dealers. That's why we are complaining. And we like them, Vivacell and the government, so that they can sit down and iron out what is the problem. Either there is a different with the agreement, then they renew it.
Vivacell informed its subscribers and distributors in a published note today that the company is working with national authorities to resolve the matter and says it hopes it can be back in business soon in South Sudan. The note says in the event that Vivacell is shut down for good in South Sudan, the company's management will court, Dali provide for a clear mechanism for reimbursement of the cash equivalent to the airtime and SIM card stock being held by dealers, agents, and retailers. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Juba.
Still on VivaCell's story, some South Sudanese lawyers say the government's move has serious legal implication, and depending on the contract VivaCell had with the government, VivaCell could sue the Kiir administration for massive losses incurred due to the suspension of its operation. Nabil Biagio has that story for VOA from Juba.
Kenyi Yassin, executive director of the group Advocates for Human Rights and Democracy, says even though the government's reason for suspending VivaCell operations is not clear, the move raises several legal issues.
It has a very serious legal implications, let me say, between the clients, the customers, and the VivaCell. We have our data already together there with the VivaCell. Now we don't know the subject matter of the problems. The citizens does not know about it. But we are also figuring that there might be some problem. They won't interfere with the data security.
Yassin says the company has a legal obligation to ensure that its customers' data is protected at all times. And Yassin says VivaCell employees who lose their jobs as a result of the suspension will have the right to pursue their rights in court, as well as customers and businessmen dealing with VivaCell who suffer financial losses due to the shutdown.
All the workers who are working in VivaCell, even with the subscribers, we have the right to sue the company. VivaCell is also liable to sue the government for the losses that have been incurred since international traffic were suspended. VivaCell is in position to sue the government if our system, our legal system, is not broken in the country.
Umara Joseph, an advocate with the Juba-based Mizan al-Adala firm, says the government has the right to shut down companies that don't comply with the law. But he says if VivaCell has done nothing wrong, it can sue the government.
The management of VivaCell itself can take the action to the court. If they feel that they are really aggrieved to take this issue to the court, they can easily take these things to the court, bearing in mind that, okay, there are a lot of implications that this shutdown has caused to the company.
Joseph says, depending on the contracts that regulate VivaCell's work with its clients and end users, customers may be able to sue the company as well.
If there is a clause that allows that for them to sue VivaCell, and then they can for that matter. But of course, if there are circumstances like this one here, where the government comes and shuts down, and then they can resort maybe to solve it amicably outside the court, and then sort out the differences. If there are some losses that needs to be, or damages that needs to be paid to businessmen, they can easily pay those damages to those businessmen.
South Sudan's National Communication Authority announced last week that it was suspending VivaCell operations on directives from the Minister of Information, Communication Technology and Postal Services. It did not provide a full explanation, and neither did Information Minister Michael Makwey when asked point blank by this program. Mr. Makwey told South Sudan in Focus the government did not have to explain its actions, but indicated VivaCell failed to pay a fee for an operating license. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Last week, the Carter Center in Atlanta, Georgia, announced South Sudan had reached a zero transmission in Guinea-Worm for more than 1 year. South Sudan's health minister, Dr. Riek Gok Kok, tells INBO what steps partners took to rid the country off of Guinea worm and the lessons learned by health workers in fighting other diseases in South Sudan.
We found out that South Sudan had the highest cases of Guinea worm. Over 20,581 cases were recorded in 2006. And today, we have zero cases. So if we have zero cases from 20,581, I think this is a massive achievement.
Can you talk specifically about what the government did along with the Carter Center and the volunteers and the NGOs to end the transmission of guinea worm in South Sudan?
Yeah, the government first gave us the political support, which is very essential. in making any achievement of this kind. And then also the provision of clean drinking water, which was a key in eliminating the disease. So the government also, regarding the payment and salaries for the officials of the Ministry of Health involved in this campaign, I think it was a great contribution on their side.
Now, the government and its partners were able to stop the spread of guinea worm in South Sudan. I'm wondering, though, what's next for the Ministry of Health? What other disease would you like to tackle in South Sudan?
Now, we are now making use of this achievement by rolling out the experience and lessons we learned from the eradicating of guinea worm in South Sudan to other health problems, especially the maternal mortality rate in South Sudan, which is also the highest. We want to roll out the experience of the Carter Center at the community level in what we call the Boma Health Initiative. So we have launched it, and we are going to implement it this year, 2018, making use of the better infrastructure that was developed by the Carter Center by bringing on board those workers to continue fighting other health health problems. There is another also deadly disease, which is the TB, tuberculosis. We are also going to use the better infrastructure and the better lessons that we have learned from the Carter Center to end TB in South Sudan. And we are very optimistic that we shall overcome these two health problems, maternal mortality and the TB disease.
What are some of the lessons that you learned from fighting guinea worm that you will then translate into fighting maternal mortality or tuberculosis, as you just said?
We have learned the importance of partnership. Partnership is a very powerful tool. We are going to consolidate the partnership with the different stakeholders, being the communities, our partners, international or local NGOs, UN agencies, government structures. We are going to make use of these collaborative efforts.
That's Dr. Riak Gaygok, South Sudan's health minister, speaking to Ian Bior from Atlanta, Georgia. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what is the government of South Sudan doing to improve food security? Find out when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what important life-saving technique do you know?
I was once a member of Red Cross, so I was trained to give first aid, for example, to a baby who is choking, you get? Then to give first aid to someone who has had a fractured dislocation. Yeah, that's all.
Self-defense. It is a life-saving technique because the city where we are now has lots of thugs everywhere. And if you have that self-defense, it really, at least they may take what they want from you, but it saves your life.
When someone has run into a water, let me say, was swimming, you pull him or her up from the water, and then you pump the water out, and you give him oxygen or her with a kiss of life.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. United Nations agencies say they will work with the South Sudan government to improve the country's disaster preparedness response time. The Minister for Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management says the measures will include building food stores to tackle food insecurity. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
The three-year strategic plan launched today by UN agencies and the government is in response to South Sudan's ever-increasing humanitarian needs, according to the UN and Juba. They say they are adopting a proactive approach which includes improving humanitarian access and making humanitarian deliveries available to those affected by conflict, economic crisis, and disasters. Minister for Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management Hussein Mar Nyot says South Sudan is in desperate need of humanitarian assistance.
We know there is still crisis in the country, and our people, wherever they are, including Juba where we stay, people are in need of assistance.
Nyot says over the next 3 years, UN agencies and the government will strengthen food security by constructing storage facilities for strategic food reserves in all states. He says post-disaster management assessments will also be conducted in all states to strengthen disaster management capability. But Nyot says the plan will only succeed if the UN receives more financial support from its donors. Allen Naudeho, the UN resident humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan, says the government must also remove all obstacles to the work of humanitarians.
We need to ensure that the resources available go to those most in need of our assistance, of our protection. To reach the most in need, wherever they are, all parties to the conflict, whether they are here or inside the country, must uphold their responsibility under international humanitarian law and allow all humanitarian actors to reach everywhere they want to reach in a free and safe and unheeded manner.
To that end, Naudahu says transaction fees and work permit fees should be minimized so NGOs can do their work. Canadian Ambassador to South Sudan, Alan Hampson, says the government must improve its communication with humanitarian organizations so the plan's objectives can be achieved.
My hope is that with the launch of the strategic plan, we can work together for a renewed spirit of cooperation and dialogue between all agencies of the government, donors, and the humanitarian community in the interest of the people of South Sudan.
Nyot says his ministry is working to do just that.
We have very clear directives from our leadership that we must remove every hindrance that's on the way of humanitarian.
Adnan Khan, the UN World Food Programme country director in South Sudan, says February's integrated pace classification underscores the degree of food crisis in the country.
It shows that in January we had some 5.3 million people in acute food insecurity. 5.3 million people is 40% more than what we found in January 2017. The projections, in the absence of any humanitarian assistance, the projections are that in the lean season, in May to July, we may have some 7.1 million people in extreme food insecurity.
Khan says the rainy season, which usually begins in April, presents its own challenges when most roads in South Sudan become impassable. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The head of the UN mission in South Sudan says the UN is working with Jonglei state officials to relocate internally displaced persons sheltering at a UN camp in Bor back to their villages. The governor of Jonglei state, Philip Aguert, says he has formed a committee to facilitate the return of the IDPs. Dengai Deng has this report for VOA from Bor.
Army's Chief David Chera visited Bor yesterday, where he met Jonglei State Governor Philip Aguer and other top state officials. Chera emerged from the meeting to say he and Aguer have agreed to work together to help IDPs in Bor who want to leave the POC site and return home.
If we can remove the problems that will stop people from moving out, whether they be the lack of resources they possess, the fear of insecurity, the fact that this humanitarian activity is going on inside the POC and perhaps not enough outside, the homes that might be occupied by the families. All of these things are obstacles which stop people from returning home, and we would like to see Bor return to the multi-ethnic, multicultural, peaceful place.
Governor Aguirre says state authorities stand ready to facilitate the relocation of the IDPs so they can resettle peacefully back in their homes.
We'll open up
for the returns of the IDPs, their rehabilitation, their local integration into the societies, and that need support so that they can start the process of agriculture in peace, the process of resettling, and provision of services like water, education.
Some IDPs at the protection of civilian sites say they want to return to the ancestral homes so their children can go to school. Speaking in her native Nui language, IDP Elizabeth Nyukwor says she has stayed at the protection site in Bor for about 5 years now, and it is not a good place to raise children.
I have two children, and they don't have good education in this place. There are so many diseases here also. We want the UN and the government to help us to return to our homes.
Another IDP, Martha Nyibol, says she too is anxious to return home. Speaking in Nuer, Nyibol is asking the UN and the government to help her family resettle.
We are happy for the visit of leader of UN. They are seeing that we do not have a good place to live in. Our children are suffering. We have been hearing about peace talks many times, and we are still in this condition. Where is the peace they're talking about? Let them resolve any challenges that is still facing the peace process, because we want to be free. Please, we do not want to stay here any longer.
Ruben Nyan, a community leader at the Bor POC, says the relationship between the IDPs and the host community has improved considerably compared to the previous years. Speaking in Nuer, Nyan says women and young people from the POC are now able to go and buy food from Bor's main market.
We are happy about the visit of David Chera. He talked with the state governor about us. We appreciate that. And I can say that it is a little safer now to return to our homes for those who want to return to their house. But we need assurance from the government and the UN.
Nyan says it would be wonderful if the UN can continue to provide food and other items until they are settled back in their villages. And he says if state authorities want to help, they should tell those occupying their homes to evacuate. Governor Aguirre says IDPs whose houses are open can start heading home right away. Some 85,000 IDPs have been living at the UN-run POC in Bor since the fighting broke out in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
From Bor, we move to Nairobi, where a Kenyan opposition leader remains detained at Nairobi Airport for a third straight day. Miguna Miguna, who was stripped of his Kenyan passport and deported last month, has been barred from entering the country despite a judge's order that authorities allow him to appear before the High Court yesterday. The standoff has called into question the public reconciliation of Kenya's top political rivals earlier this month. Rahel Ombor has more for VOA from Nairobi.
Opposition supporters on Wednesday blocked the main highway linking the cities of Kisumu and Kakamega, lighting bonfires. The protesters were demanding the release of high-ranking opposition leader Miguna Miguna. Kenya's High Court on Tuesday ordered that Miguna be released and appear in court on Wednesday morning, but the government did not comply. The court has ordered three senior government officials to appear in court Thursday to face sentencing for defying the court order. Miguna's lawyer, Nelson Harvey, said Miguna's detention at the Nairobi airport is illegal and a violation of his rights.
He's held up in a confined area, actually in a washroom, without sufficient space for even to move around. He's not been provided food. He's not been given access to us as his lawyers. We've been at the airport since yesterday morning. We were not able to see him.
Miguna was first arrested in January. His arrest was linked to his involvement with the so-called swearing-in of Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga as the people's president. Authorities deported Miguna to Canada, where he is a citizen. He tried to return to Kenya on Monday. His lawyer and the government disagree what happened next. Officials say Miguna refused to enter Kenya on a Canadian passport and refused to take up an offer of a six-month visa, insisting he was not a foreigner. Mwenda Njoka is a spokesman for the Ministry of Interior and Coordination of National Government. He said Miguna is making trouble for himself on purpose.
He's being asked to do what everybody does at the airport. You arrive and you give the passport, it's stamped and you're allowed in. So what is so difficult for him to do that?
Harvey said Miguna is a Kenyan citizen by birth and can enter the country as he pleases.
The government has Miguna's passport. What they need to do is to reissue that passport, take the passport, stamp it entry, and Miguna kaboom is inside the country.
Harvey told VOA he's asking the courts to order Miguna's immediate release and readmit him to the country. The attorney said the government is acting in contempt of court orders and setting a dangerous precedent. Njoka said the government is not violating any court orders.
We give him, an opportunity. He just wants to be treated specially. Let me just summarize it this way. He's a drama queen who wants to be treated, given special treatment, and he enjoys that kind of publicity.
Earlier this month, Odinga and President Uhuru Kenyatta announced they will work together, an initiative both sides said was aimed at healing divisions caused by last year's presidential election. Miguna was against the newfound unity and accused Odinga of betraying his millions of supporters. During Miguna's detainment this week, Odinga was present for a couple of hours and could be seen trying to prevent his re-deportation by immigration officials. Odinga has since remained silent on the matter. Rael Ombor, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. The South Sudan government last night shut down mobile phone network operator Vivacell. Information Minister Michael McQuay says the company failed to pay license fees that total more than $60 million. He says that's why the government shut down the company, which forced tens of thousands of network subscribers to rush out and buy SIM cards. Business owners say they lost thousands, if not millions, of South Sudanese pounds in unsold airtime. McQuay acknowledges that the government exempted Vivacell from paying taxes for about a decade and that the company did not have to pay for an operating license. But, he says, the government now wants the company to operate under the policies of the government and pay for an operating license. The network was shut down at midnight. Many subscribers only learned of the decision, however, this morning. Throughout the day, long queues could be seen forming in lines at offices of other mobile phone networks operators across the capital. Hundreds of people rushed out to buy new SIM cards. Some South Sudanese lawmakers say the government's decision to shut down Vivacell has serious legal implications. And depending on the contract the company had with the government, it could sue for massive losses that it will incur due to suspension of its operations. Kenya Yassin, executive director of the group Advocates for Human Rights and Democracy, says even though the government's reason for suspending Vivacell isn't clear, the move raises many legal issues. And finally, UN agencies say they will work with South Sudan to improve the country's disaster preparedness and response time. That's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song I Am Sorry by Abo Dubieng and Aya Nakamura.
Je t'ai juste volé ton cœur, je n'ai pas souillé ton âme. Je t'ai juste volé ton cœur, je n'ai pas souillé ton âme. Sorry, 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 sorry. Je t'ai juste volé ton cœur, je n'ai pas souillé ton âme. Je t'ai juste volé ton cœur, je n'ai pas souillé ton âme. Sorry, sorry.
We have been listening to a test of Abo Dubieng and Aya Nakamura with the song I'm Sorry. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for joining us. We'd like to know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
May baby.